Hello, Zimbabwe. Welcome to Live Talk. And we are coming to you live from Studio 7 at the Voice of America in Washington. I am your host, Evans Zeninga. And today we are looking at the one-year war between Israel and Hamas, in which thousands of people have been killed, and the world is battling to end the conflict, which has drawn in Iran and Lebanon. But first, a look at what is happening in Zimbabwe. Members of the public had a chance to pay their last respects today to the late national hero Shinga Dube amid reports that the former Liberation War stalwart's wish was to be laid to rest at Lady Stanley Cemetery in Bulawayo, where his former commander Lookout Masuku and others are buried. Dube, a former senior Zipra combatant, played a critical role in the integration for former Zipra and Zanla combatants and the Rhodesian Army soon after independence in 1980. According to his family, the former cabinet minister and director of Zimbabwe Defense Industries died of kidney failure in Bulawayo. He is expected to be laid to rest at the National Heroes Acre in Harare on Wednesday. Let's hear what the Senator We're going to hear what Senator Molly Ndlovu said today at the Barberfield Stadium about the late freedom fighter.
The war veteran, the founder member of the struggle, indoda yabhoda la mazwe, into yaleli lizwe. So thina, we feel very proud today. Into enziwe umongameli wethu, ukuthi anike ubaba uChinga isitoto sokuba yi-national hero, singazange sicele empini. It's the first of its kind kule region.
Kuyini ozamkhumbula ngakho kakhulu wena?
Ubaba uChinga ndamkhumbula ngokuba yi-man of his word. Indoda eyayingathi ingathiki lokhu itsho khonoko. Wayengathi angatshintshi. Angathi into ngayifuni ngayifuni. Angathi into ayifuni ngayifuni.
Sethi isikhexo esinganani kakhulu-ke emandebeleni.
Esingamendekiwe. Asikwazi ukuthi sizafaka bani endaweni yakhe. Indawo yakhe ayila-replacement.
Awusitsheleke ngeprogramu kuthiwa kuhamba njani la. What will happen from now on?
Inkosi isifikile lapha uzovalelisa abantu bakobulawayo. Siyasuka lapha izabuyela mbijana bodas ibe abese siyalala emzini wakhe and then ekuseni abesiya eparade esuka eparade abese siya kuJoshua Mkabunko ngaphezu kwentaba.
Esuka lapha sesiyarara?
Yes.
Ukhalelo lwatha ngeWednesday?
Yes.
That there was Senator Molly Ndlovu speaking at Barberfield Stadium with Studio 7's Ezra Sibanda. And still in Africa, in Mozambique, there are four candidates vying for the presidency in an election to be held this week. Some pledge to rid the country of alleged widespread corruption and improve its economy, while others say they will end the long-running insurgency in the northern province of Cabo Delgado that has driven out about 1 million since 2017, as VOA Nairobi Bureau Chief Mariana Diallo reports from Maputo. Some Mozambicans say they are more interested in a better life than who wins the elections this week.
The same Frelimo party has ruled Mozambique in southern Africa since its 1975 independence from Portugal. Some say the country is doing just fine, including 69-year-old Argentina Bebe, who told VOA she's too old for change and wants continuity in presidential and legislative elections slated for Wednesday.
I'm not interested in change. I already know the people, but I prefer to continue the improvement of Mozambique.
Others, like 28-year-old Ernesto Cremildo Castigo, who works at a butcher shop, says he'll vote for change.
Mainly due to corruption, so that Mozambique can develop, so that society can feel more at ease, in terms of justice, in terms of education, in terms of public transportation.
Aslak Orr, researcher at the Christian Michelsen Institute in Norway, has been doing research on Mozambique for 25 years. He says corruption does affect the daily lives of ordinary people.
You have everyday corruption where people meet civil services and they have to, you know, pay little bribes in order to get their services out of the state or municipal institutions that they relate to. And that complicates things a bit.
Four candidates are vying for the presidency, including Daniel Chapo, the choice for the ruling Frelimo party. At a recent rally, the 47-year-old former radio presenter told supporters that peace and security for his country will be a top priority.
Because without peace, without security, there is no development. As I said, here we have our brothers who are suffering from terrorist attacks in Cabo Delgado.
The government has been battling an insurgency in the gas and oil-rich Cabo Delgado province, where about 4,000 people have reportedly been killed and about 1 million displaced since 2017, affecting multi-billion-dollar oil and gas projects. Meanwhile, analysts say that one of Frelimo's biggest accomplishments has been ending years of its brutal war with the Mozambican National Resistance Movement, or RENAMO. RENAMO has since become one of the main opposition parties that came in second in the last presidential election. After the death of longtime leader Afonso Dhlakama in 2018, its newest leader, Osufo Mamad, accuses the Frelimo party of having no proposals to solve ordinary people's problems.
Vote for you have to have jobs tomorrow so we have good access roads. Did you hear me right? Your land is a rich area. You are poor. It's through Frelimo's poor governance.
The other two candidates include Lutero Simango, a 64-year-old and leader of the Mozambique Democratic Movement, and 50-year-old Venancio Mondlane, an independent who used to belong to the RENAMO party and seems popular among the youth. The National Electoral Commission met with international observers Friday to explain the voting system and answer their questions. The commission chairperson, Carlos Simao Matsine, said that all voting materials should be in place by Monday, and voting is expected to take place across the country, including in Cabo Delgado. 17.1 million people have registered to vote, 3 million more than the number was at the last election in 2019. Mariama Diallo, VOA News, Maputo, Mozambique.
We're going to keep a watch of the Mozambique elections. We'll keep you updated as it unfolds. Now back to our topic of the day. Everyone in Israel has been affected by the conflict between this country and Hamas. Many have lost loved ones. Others had their homes and communities destroyed during the Hamas attack on October 7. VOA visited some of the hardest hit sites, and Linda Gradstein reports.
For Talma Atsili, it's still October 7th, 2023. Her son Aviv was killed as he fought hundreds of Hamas gunmen who stormed their kibbutz near Oz, less than a kilometer from the Gaza border. Aviv's remains are still being held hostage in Gaza, so a temporary grave has been set up for him at the kibbutz.
I can't even think of what will be here, both in terms of security and in terms of the emotional strength required to return to a place that has absorbed so much loss. I very much enjoyed walking barefoot, both inside the kibbutz and in the fields, and now I have this sort of feeling that the land here is soaked in blood, and how can I continue to walk barefoot?
One quarter of near Oz's residents were killed or taken hostage, and more than half the homes destroyed. In nearby Kibbutz Be'eri, more than 100 residents were killed, among them Hagi Avni, a father of five and member of the Be'eri security squad. His nine-year-old daughter, Eliel, writes his name on the wall of her former room.
I miss my daddy. I wanted to say goodbye to my house before they destroy it and rebuild it.
But many residents of Be'eri and other Gaza border communities doubt that they will move back in.
The question is how to live here with some kind of arrangement. Like with Egypt and Jordan,
A year on, hostage families still stage mass protest rallies demanding that the Israeli government bring back some 100 remaining hostages. Avichai Brodetch from Kibbutz Kfar Aza began the protest movement days after his wife and three young children were taken hostage on October 7th. His family was released in the November hostage deal. But speaking at the ruins of his kibbutz, Brodetch says Israeli society still feels the trauma.
As a nation, we have to remember this as part of the Jewish history to remember. But personally, if you ask me, I'd like to live my life, you know, just look forward, you know, live in peace. You know, after we suffered so much, I think we have a good opportunity to do it now. You know, both sides suffered so much.
But a year later, a Gaza ceasefire and hostage release seem far away. For those in Israel missing loved ones and their lost communities, October 7th, 2023 is never ending. Linda Gradstein, VOA News in the Gaza border communities.
Regaiti torebefu vadari vedu vachigadzirira tinodzoka mushure memashoko anotevera.
Munguva yekushanduka kwezvinhu apo nyika inenge isingaratidze chiedza zvatinonzwa zvisingaenderane nezvatinoona. Tinotsvaga chokwadi. Patinoudzwa chidimbu chete chenyaya, tinoshaya chivimbo. Munguva dzekuoma kwezvinhu, muzviroto zvedu, remangwana ratinoshuwira, zvose zvinoda nepfenyuro yakasununguka. Pano paVoice of America tinokupai chero nhau dzekuti vamwe vanoti hadzifanirwe kubuditswa sezvo dziine njodzi. Tinobatanidza pasi rose nekutaura chokwadi. PaVoice of America tinokupai zvizere pane zvinenge zvichiitika.
And for those that have just joined us, please note that we are streaming live on our Facebook pages, VOA Shona, VOA Studio 7, and VOA Ndebele. We are also live on YouTube, VOA Zimbabwe. So today marks 1 year since the outbreak of the Israel-Hamas war on October 7, 2023. Hamas-led militants launched a surprise attack on southern Israel, killing approximately 1,200 people and kidnapping 250 hostages. About 100 of them are still in captivity, and a third of those people are believed to be dead. Israel hit back, saying it wants to eradicate Hamas, and according to authorities in the Gaza Strip, at least 42,000 people have been killed by the Israel army, with more than half of the casualties being women and children. The war has also spread to Lebanon, with Israel fighting Hezbollah and escalating tensions with Iran. The situation remains dire, with no clear resolution in sight. The international community continues to call for a ceasefire and humanitarian aid to alleviate the suffering of civilians caught in the conflict. And now joining us to discuss this, first from the Black Jewish community in Zimbabwe, also known as the Lemba people, the president of the Harare Lemba Synagogue, Mr. Modric Mayeresera. And secondly, we also have the president of the Supreme Council of Islamic Affairs in Zimbabwe, Sheikh Ismail Dua. We were anticipating to also have a political analyst, Professor Ricky Mukonza. We are still trying to get to him. But in the meantime, gentlemen, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much.
Thank you so much. Pleasure to be here.
All right. Amazing. Now, gentlemen, it's been 365 days of war, of terror, of fighting, and it's been going on and on and on. And from the way it looks, it seems it's even getting bigger and indulging other countries and other organizations and other players. Let me start with you, Sheikh Dua. Say your thoughts on the war after a full year.
Thank you very much. Good evening, dear listeners. My name is Sheikh Ismail Duwa, the president of Supreme Council of Islamic Affairs in Zimbabwe. The war in Palestine and Israel, people does not understand. They think that is a religious war. It's not a religious war. This is a political war. This is just like Zimbabwe, when Zimbabwe was invaded by the white people here, and we have to take arms to fight to take back our land. That is what is happening in Israel. And as I'm talking, I've been in those countries, Lebanon, Israel, and I've seen it by my eyes. And if you look into the war now in Palestine, you'll find that there are not only Muslims who are fighting, but we are talking about Palestinians who constitute Palestinian Jews and Christian Jews and Muslim Jews. They united fighting for their land. Now, coming to the war, we call right now for peaceful solution. Right now, we call because the victims are the children now. The victims are weak people, women, and schools are being bombarded. No humanitarian. So we call for peaceful solution. And the main culprit here is the United Nations, because there are some resolutions which were passed by the United Nations, but they are not being implemented. Mm-hmm. And you find that it is just like a football pitch, where you find that the player of the game sometimes is a referee. That is what is happening. You find that the United Nations is got to veto. They are the referee. Sometimes they are the players who are, in fact, fueling these wars. So we call now for a peaceful solution and implement the resolutions which were passed in the United Nations.
Mm-hmm. We hear you there loud and clear. Mr. Maeresera, would you like to weigh in on this one as well before we move on?
The first thing that comes to my mind is regret because of the loss of life that is happening on both sides. So before I can lay or point a thing of regret, rather a thing of accusation. It is regrettable that we are having this situation where women, children on both sides are suffering because of the war that is going on. Mm-hmm. However, if we take things into perspective, today is October 7th. And today's October 7, we remember the catastrophic events that happened. And those events are the events that triggered the situation that we are having now, which is the brazen attacking of an armed civilian. Yes, there are issues that are political relating to land disputes. But we have to agree that the things that triggered the situation that we are having now are the brazen attacks by Hamas on unarmed civilians, kibbutzim, women and children, taking them hostages. And we also have to remember that this is a proxy war. The country, or rather the country that is the biggest culprit, is Iran. Especially somewhere far away from the conflict, using Hezbollah and Hamas, and it's on them that we must lay all the blame. It's on them that we have to put or to point the finger of accusation. The situation that we are having now, which we must condemn, and we must pray that it must come to a conclusion soon and swiftly, because we cannot continue to have the kind of suffering that we are having. It has nothing to do with religion. It has nothing to do with ethnic affiliation. But it's a situation that every sane and human person should regret. The collateral damage on both sides, it has to end. So it's spreading into a regional conflict, and I hope and pray that a solution needs to be found now and soon. But Israel has the right to defend itself. They didn't initiate this attack. They are defending themselves, Hezbollah on the north and Hamas in the south. Surrounded by enemies that don't recognize its existence, what other way should they do it? Should they let the things that happened on the 7th of October repeat themselves? No. Both sides should exercise restraint, and they should sit down and talk these things over. And a peaceful solution needs to be found and very soon.
Mm-hmm. If I gather correctly from both of you gentlemen, you are agreeing that on both sides, on both ends, this has been going on for too long and has to end. I also see the finger pointing where Sheikh Dua says the biggest culprit is the United Nations. And I hear Amere Seramchiti, Iran is also the biggest finger pointing end from your angle. But then moving forward, what needs to be done, do you think? Let me start with you, Sheikh Dua. What do you think needs to be done to put this to rest?
First of all, I want to correct the previous speaker, which said Iran is the culprit. He's not looking into the other side that America is influencing. He could have said America and Iran have maybe agreed, but now he's forgetting that America is fueling on this thing. And Islamic countries, especially progressive Islamic countries like Iran, which stands for underprivileged and humanitarian, have to come in, because America is in, and the United Nations is in America. And secondly, he said Israel is defending themselves. How can they defend themselves in someone's house? I think the previous speaker should know the history that Israel was imposed in 1947 when they came and settled into someone's land. So what Palestinians did was they are claiming what belonged to them. I earlier stated that the situation of Palestine is not different from the situation of Zimbabwe. We were called the terrorists here when we were claiming for our land, when we were claiming for our country. That is the same. Mm-hmm. So the previous speaker, Ms. Maikere, should know the history, what happened in Palestine. Those Jews who are settled there, there were American Jews who were imposed there. So the Palestinians are claiming what belongs to them. But
at the end,
we are saying
let me ask you there, Sheikh. Let's give Vamayresere an opportunity to respond. I'm sure he probably wants to respond to that point before we move on.
Okay, we may go on blaming each other, but the point that I want to make is the biggest thing that is needed in this kind of situation is for people to introspect and exercise what I can call empathy. That is putting yourself in other people's shoes. When you imagine the kind of suffering that you can undergo if your kids are kidnapped, killed, tortured, then you get into a better position to understand how the other person is going through or what the other person can go through if the things that is happening to them can happen to you. Mm-hmm. So my heart goes to the women and the children who are suffering in Gaza and in Lebanon and in Israel, as rockets are being fired from across the borders, both from the north and the south. This is a situation that calls for us and our morals and ethics to rise up instead of anger and accusation. Mm-hmm. Those so, don't help. We can go on blaming each other, but the thing that is needed now is peace.
Tanzwa mashoko amataura asi ndinoda kuti tisati taenda gentlemen ngatibatei point uyo yake yekuti what do we need, what does the world need to do, zvoitwa sei kuti nyaya iyi gadziriswe ipere. Rega tipe mukana va Sheikh Adua, if you can come in briefly, what needs to be done, and then tozodzoka kuna vamaeresera voti pao what needs to be done tisati tapetera chirongwa.
Yes, I've got 3 points to be done.
Mm-hmm.
First of all, the United Nations resolution should be implemented. Secondly, the land should be returned to the owners. Thirdly, we need ceasefire right now and have amicable solution which goes back to implement the United Nations resolutions. I thank you.
Mm-hmm. And let me come back to you, Vama Eresera. Also, in closing, as your parting word, what needs to be done?
Recognition of Israel as a state, and that is the right to exist. That will be the beginning, and then the parties involved should come together, sit down, and talk, and find an amicable situation, ending in a ceasefire, cessation of all hostilities, exchanging of prisoners of war, and then a lasting peaceful solution should then be found through dialogue.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much, gentlemen, both of you. I would like to thank you so much for being on the show today. That was the president of the Harare Lemba Synagogue, Mr. Modric Maeresera, and the president of the Supreme Council of Islamic Affairs in Zimbabwe, Sheikh Ismail Dua. We were hoping to have political analyst Professor Mukonza. We failed. The lines were bad today, unfortunately. But our listeners and our viewers, we thank you so much for being on the show. As usual, we appreciate you joining and we appreciate your following. I will read one comment before we go from one viewer here who has been following on Facebook. I'm going to read it out. His name is Dixon Majaha. Dixon says, we pray for the end of this war and all other wars in the world. We have enough suffering. Let's unite and end these wars. What a message. And that brings us to the end of our show today. I am signing off in Washington. This is Evans Zininga.